The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
New highs, and more new highs. GDP rocks higher, but why? Tesla finally breaks, and listener questions. All this and much more on episode number 609 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Howdy, it's Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And I'm glad that you're with me today and each and every week as we go through the markets and finances and go through the whole world of the world of investing and trying to decipher and to come up with some information that we could use and hopefully profit from. So that's what the show is all about, with some great guests and with some hopefully good insights in terms of the world of finance. So this week is one of those weeks where we've seen an incredible amount of questions, mysteries that surround the markets, because markets are once again approaching their new highs, or have made new highs, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. And a lot of people are questioning, like, what's the story here? Yeah, we're seeing earnings that are better, but a lot of mixed outlook and guidance from companies, and we're seeing that the rest of the world isn't doing as great. What's going on? We'll get to the bottom of that, and we'll talk more about this throughout the show today and get to some listener questions, et cetera. And it's April, the end of April, coming to an end here. It's been a pretty good month so far. Markets are up nicely, continuing the streak that we saw that started in the beginning of this year, when there was all of a sudden that gigantic switch, that incredible movement and moment that all of a sudden everybody said, wait a second, markets are really overdone here and we got a Fed at our back and things are not as bad as they seem, so we think, and everybody just piled in. And that's just been driving markets, a lot of momentum playing right now, and better than expected numbers, particularly from earnings, where earnings estimates have been brought down so significantly that it was this really easy bar to hurdle over. And I thought we'd take a look at where we are right now in terms of what's happening in the world of earnings. And if we look at the S&P 500, about 40% of the S&P 500 companies have reported. We have a lot more coming up. But so far, about 80% of the companies that have reported have actually beaten EPS estimates. And that's a little bit higher than usual. Oftentimes, we see about, we'll say about 72 to 75% of companies beating S&P analyst expectations and various companies that are coming out with their numbers. But the overall consensus numbers, when we look at beats and compared to analysts, they're about 80% of the companies have actually outpaced where analysts thought they would be. Now, it's a different story when it comes to revenues. Revenues have been a bit weaker. Only about 45%, approximately 45% of companies have actually beaten on revenues. And that's a lot better than most had hoped for. But remember something. It's really important to note this, that we're really dealing with a reality versus expectation. We're not looking at the raw numbers necessarily here. What we're saying is that we thought things would be really bad, and they're not as bad. So you know what? With that, we're happy. And also remember something else. A lot of investors are just simply looking at what the estimates are and then what the actual numbers are. It doesn't say, well, a year ago we did this, last quarter we did that, and where are we now? It's really just looking at this number. So if in fact analysts come down with their earnings estimate numbers as they have, and now we're beating, what does that really say? Is it really telling us the whole story? I don't think so. Earnings have slowed dramatically over the last 6 months to a year. And a lot of that has to do with the things that we know about, the tax benefits wearing off, much harder comps to look back at, and just generally a slowdown of the economic backdrop around the world that is affecting us here with our company. So when you look at this and you say, well, where should we be right now? Should we be at all-time highs on some of these numbers? Should stocks be rallying as much as they have been? It's kind of a mystery there. And one of the other things is this big discrepancy. It is benefiting the markets because it isn't as bad as was expected. And the turn of that and the realization of that, combined with the fact that we have a lot more liquidity, at least perceived, because the Fed is not going to be raising rates for any time soon, at least that's what we are told to believe, is what is really driving markets right now. Listen, some say, well, you know, if all this information isn't playing out, but markets are going up, it's false. It's fake. That's not the case. There's a line that a good friend of mine, Brian Shannon, he's a technical analyst, and he says, and I think it really is important. He says, it's only price that pays. And markets are liking what they see right now, and price is what is really truth. The price of the markets, the price of a stock is what it should be valued at right now. That is the reality. Now, is it going to be that in the future? Are we going to see somehow a reality check sometime in the future? Possibly. But right now, that's where we are. That is the fact. Is it fake? Is it false? Is it a number that is just built up on false hopes? Possibly. But again, it's not right now. So don't get yourself crazy about this. Don't look at this as, oh, you know what? It's all pretend. It's all BS. And, you know, I'm not going to play. Play as long as it's going the direction that you are, that will benefit you. If you sat out this whole time, you didn't get any benefit. Now, if in 3 months from now, markets come down and you can cheer that, oh, I was right. Well, you could have actually played the long side of the markets on the way up and then the short side on the way down if that's what actually happens versus just sitting on the sideline. You could have profited a couple of times. But unfortunately, I think a lot of us get set in our ways, and sometimes even professionals. You get set with what you believe is to be the case. This is absolutely what I believe. And you end up on the wrong side or not involved at all. So just realize that there is somewhere probably a truth that is both short-term and long-term. But the whole idea of being involved with markets is not to be right. It's to make money. Put aside your feelings and your speculations and try to just conform to what's going on. We talked about that last week a little bit. We talked about this idea of investing like Moses. What would Moses have done? We talked about the four people, the four sons. We took this biblical reference and this discussion from the Passover Seder and converted it to a degree and tried to bring out some reference to and make it a discussion about investing. And if you really change your perspective on, hey, I want to be right versus I want to profit, that's where the benefit lies and where you could really do well for yourself long term. Now, with that being said, with that in the background, you know, you also want to look at some other things that are a little bit weird right now, funky. There's definitely some funkiness with the markets and comparing the markets of where we are, earnings from where we are and have been, putting aside the estimates and how much we've leaped over those particular hurdles, and take a look for a second at the economy. Now, we know something. We all know something. And I think we need to agree with this, that the economy and markets are not always aligned. They're not always running in the same direction. Oftentimes, markets will move ahead of an economic move. And it may be right, it may be wrong, but nonetheless, over time, we do see that there is a correlation longer term of, you know, markets moving up, economy getting stronger, markets moving down, economy getting softer, or vice versa. Whatever the particular lag is on that or whatever, but long term, when you stretch it out, there is a correlation of a solid economy and a really good stock market. And I've talked about this a few times, this whole idea of looking at the Citibank or Citigroup Economic Surprise Index. And you could look that up on the web. Just look up Citigroup Economic Surprise Index. And then the first thing that will pop up is a PDF that's updated daily. And you could take a look at this and you'll see on the charts. There are the first two are really the ones that I look at and pay attention to. It's first of all, the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index itself, which is a look at how the economy is doing compared to analyst expectations. Just like we talked about with stocks, right now what's happening is that stocks are outpacing the expectations of analysts. And that's a good thing. If you look at the Economic Surprise Index, what it shows is a negative 57. And a negative 57 means that analysts are too optimistic about the numbers, and the numbers that are coming out are much lower than they anticipate. That's a pretty low number. Not the lowest in history, but it's a low number. The second chart on it's from Yardeni, and it shows a comparison on the same chart of the Economic Surprise Index and S&P PE ratios. And you'll notice there's a massive divergence there. PE ratios came in a bit into December, down about, we'll call it about 14 for the S&P 500. We're back up to about 17 right now. Meanwhile, you'll notice that the surprise index has been dropping. Again, meaning the economy is a lot worse than analysts predict, yet we're seeing an expansion of PEs dramatically. Now, I've talked about this a few times because I think it's really important to look at. Some people will say, there is absolutely no correlation with the economy and in particular the Economic Surprise Index and what actually happens with stocks. I beg to differ. If you look at that chart, you'll notice there is a bit of a lag time, but generally speaking, a few things happen. What we see is that when the Economic Surprise Index peaks and markets peak and the Economic Surprise Index starts rolling, usually stocks start rolling. Somewhere, again, a bit of a lag for either or, but there is a correlation there. It's not absolute, but there is a trend that looks very similar. Now, at the same time, I look at this and I say to myself, okay, well, what does that mean now? What does that mean today? Economists are looking at the economy, which is the basis of the engine that helps out everything from companies' profitability to sentiment, consumer spending, all these things, economy, right? Well, if the economy is not doing as well, how are stocks doing much better? Well, we know they're not. We know that the companies are not. The stock price is doing better, and we're seeing this PE expansion. That's really good. And a lot of that, again, predicated on how the Fed has opened up and said, you know what, we're going to have your back, markets. You know, we're going to just simply sit on the sidelines, even though the economic information that's coming out is, you know, not so bad right now. But we see something in the future, and we don't want it to disrupt markets. Now, they don't say it exactly like that, but that's what they're telling us. They know that their rate hikes disrupted markets. So now, yeah, they don't want that because they question whether or not markets that come down as hard as they did and continue going low could actually cause a recession, cause an economic slowdown. They don't want anything to do with that. So they realize the wealth effect and the ability to push asset prices higher help to sustain a healthy economic environment. But you know what? There's only so long they could do that. So what's happening now is that we have this odd situation that we're seeing, this discrepancy, because we're seeing at the beginning of the year the economic surprise index come down and PEs go higher, stock markets go higher, and we haven't rolled over. Oftentimes you do see that peak that we saw in the beginning of the year and now the rollover again in the surprise index, and stocks will start to roll over, but they're not doing it. So here's the question. Is this the new reality that the economy doesn't matter? I don't have an exact answer to that, but I can tell you this. When the data doesn't matter, markets can go along, and what ends up usually happening is it goes on for some time. And then there's all of a sudden this reality that smacks you in the face. And all of a sudden, boom, things change. And everybody says, well, yeah, you know, you look back and it was obvious that, yeah, earnings were good, but, you know, we still did see this slowdown overall in growth from the last year, and revenues were light and coming in questionable, and outlook for many of these companies, when you look at things like what Amazon said and what Netflix said, and you look at what's happening on many of these major companies, particularly the industrials, how they're really cutting their guidance. Well, it was pretty obvious that markets shouldn't have been, quote, shouldn't have been at these levels, but they were. So what I think we're getting right now is this overshoot. We're getting a dramatic overshoot that is built up by momentum. Well, it started with the Fed. Then we get this momentum play. Then we get the short covering that comes in. Now we start hitting all-time highs and more short covering comes in. Buyers may be like, oh, wait a minute. Hey, you know what? I don't want to miss the train on this. So we got the FOMO that now occurs. And then we get this kind of peaking out. I would bet to see and to look for a blow-off top. Now, do we get that now? Because it's been a pretty orderly increase in prices since the beginning of the year. There's been a couple of bumps on the upside that were like, maybe that's the blow-off top. But generally speaking, you know, we're not seeing these massively overbought circumstances on any indicator. Overbought, but not to like this extreme level. You can look at things like there's another greed fear index, and that index is showing extreme greed right now, which is oftentimes a level that should be an alert or something to at least put you on alert that, maybe I shouldn't be chasing things at this point. But also remember, we talked about this whole idea of market mechanics. We talked about that in the last few shows, and I put a link to get that piece that we wrote for the quarterly on the show notes for episode 609. Over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we talked about this whole idea that market mechanics are part of what is happening and why we're seeing this ramp up, where you have automatic and systematic investing and you have pension money coming to the markets due to the fact you have more people working. On a regular basis, money is just being automatically invested. On top of that, you have the algos, you have the buybacks, all these things combined with the things we just talked about with regard to the short covering. The earnings are better than analysts estimated, more liquidity, at least in theory in the markets, or not less liquidity in the markets. And of course, the buyback, all these things combined with the market mechanics is really, really showing through pretty well, I think, right now. And I think many of us agree because I've received so many emails and, you know, people are asking me basically the question, could this continue? And it could, right? All this could continue. All this market mechanics that are going on and the whole idea that there is this continuation of just money pouring into markets from everywhere, especially with a dovish Fed. It could continue for some time, right? In other words, the question they're asking and I'm asking, is this time different? Oh boy, I said it because I wanted to say it. Because I wanted to say it so you can hear it. I wanted you to think about that. Is this time different? We've heard that so many times before. And when you stop and step back for just a moment and you look at what's going on around the world and you look at the earnings and you look at the economics, You look at the incredible dysfunction in Washington, and then you ask yourself, is this time different? You have to follow up the question with another question. Why is it different? And what would make it different? And more importantly, if it is different, for how long will it be different? Is it temporarily different? Or is this a situation that is a fundamental change in how markets operate? Where we don't care about price related to valuation. We don't care about anything more than just putting money to work in the markets because really, there's not that many good alternatives. And I did get a lot of really good emails from people. They stated all sorts of things and their concerns and comments. But again, I want to stress what I said before I even started this discussion is this. It's price that pays. Don't get confused with, again, your thoughts, feelings, emotions, projections. Follow along what you believe is to be right in terms of all of the inputs and all of the numbers, and then also use the technicals to guide you. Right now, the technicals are guiding you that, generally speaking, you want to be long. Now, how long? Do you want to be balls to the walls, put it all in, ride it all on? Well, so far this year, if you did that, you're in great shape. Of course, that's coming off of a massive, just a terrible drop that we saw back in November, December. So you recovered all that for the most part, depending on how your portfolio is structured. If you're not market timing and just held on, you recovered all that. You're at an all-time high on the market, so you got to recover at least a chunk of that. And if you haven't, you got to look at your portfolio and wonder, well, what's going on? What's wrong? What am I doing that's the problem? So when we look at what's going on right now, I think there's a mystery. I think that will be unraveled. I think we'll get it figured out. My guess is, and my best estimate, and what I'm preparing for, is that we're going to see a market roll over. Now, is it going to roll over 25%? I'm not talking about that. I think some of the excess needs to come out of what this level of exuberance that we're seeing right now, which does not align on any factor that I'm looking at to reality. But I'm not going to try to get ahead of it. Because this administration is focused on markets. They're focused on making sure, especially now, that markets stay elevated because don't forget, we're running into an election season. And we've seen this in all sorts of ways around the world and here as well. It's essentially bribery. I mean, look at what Elizabeth Warren is doing. She is saying that she wants to forgive all this college debt. And she has some specifications on who would receive it and what the levels of income and requirements are to receive it, but basically wants to eliminate, I don't know, close to $1 trillion of college debt. Some ridiculous number. What is that? That is looking to appeal to the massive amount of people that have college debt outstanding and hope that they will turn and say, you know what, I'm voting with my pocketbook. I'm voting for Elizabeth Warren. The same thing is true with markets. They'll promise before you'll see probably another discussion of additional tax cuts coming. You'll see comments about more infrastructure spending. You'll see comments about all sorts of things from both the current administration, the current White House, and the president, and those running against him. Everybody is going to be pushing some kind of financial agenda forward to dangle in front of our faces to say, well, if that person gets elected, that's really going to help me out. Therefore, I'm voting for them. So that's why oftentimes we see during an election cycle, in the third year of an election, usually, you know, you see some kind of benefit because there is this carrot being dangled. And they want to keep markets up. They want to talk up everything they can. That's why you see Mnuchin coming out on a regular basis talking about the China deal. where you see Larry Kudlow saying, hey, the economy is great, markets are going to go higher, et cetera. You see Donald Trump, he's coming out with all sorts of comments about the markets and it's doing well, et cetera, only when it does well, of course. But they're all pumping the markets for the purpose of political gain. That's what's going on. And they'll do everything that they can, both the Democrats and the Republicans right now, the incumbents, as well as those that are running against them, to try to push a financial agenda forward. Now, some say that, well, if the Democrats get in, those financial agendas are going to wreck us. That's possible. One of the things that we had for a long time was this whole idea that spending would be curtailed and we'd have a better budget and we'd see that the national debt is dropped and all that. And particularly if Republicans came into power, that would be the case. That's not the case. They're spending like Democrats. National debt has never been higher. Deficit is out of control. Budget is just wonky. But yet people have more money right now because, well, companies in particular, because of the tax cuts that came in. So is this time different? I don't think it's different. I think it's pretty much the same. I think there's nothing different except for the fact that we're in a different time, a different place in history. And that we're asking that question, is this time different, is proof that it's not different. Because that question has been asked 100 times historically. Probably every single time that we see something that all of a sudden doesn't look right, doesn't calculate right, doesn't value properly. And we ask the question, is this time different? Where we can have a company that doesn't earn any money having a $10 billion valuation. Take Lyft as a great example. Wow, people will love it. We'll get this IPO out, $72. People bid it up because this time is different. And it's down in the 50s now. Probably still overvalued. Then we got Uber coming out. And we have Slack. And we just saw Pinterest. So it's probably not different. It's probably more of the same, just placed in a different time frame. Now, I want to move along because I want to get to a question. Got to grab it. Where is it here? So I get a lot of questions in, and of course you could ask any questions or comments or give me guest suggestions or whatever you want to do. Just email me, say something nice. That would be awfully nice. We get those quite often. We get some great things that people just disagree as well. So you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on the Ask Andrew button and just simply ask your question. And I've gotten a lot and I've answered a lot by email, but this one stuck out to me. This one came in from Rob Santora, and he says in his question, let me read it directly. Enjoy your podcast. Whenever is convenient, I wonder if you might talk about TIPS and bond funds and your take on them for the next 12 to 24 months. Many of us have 401ks, et cetera, in these funds. With the Fed being so dovish, are long-term investment-grade corporates a great, pretty safe bet? Thanks, Rob. I thought this was a great question because I've seen several other comments recently about the idea of TIPS and some other things, but this is really, I think, a very good time to look at this. Because when you look back at a chart and just simply look at a total return chart of TIPS and bonds in general from the last, let's say, probably the last year, that's a good time frame to look at this. Both TIPS and bonds generally follow the markets down at the end of the year, and they're following them up this year. So they're kind of working in tandem. That doesn't always happen. Oftentimes what you do see is when markets come down, bonds will start moving higher because it's a safety trade and vice versa. But these days we're seeing almost a direct correlation. Maybe bonds didn't get hit as deep as stocks did at the end of the year. Maybe they didn't come up as nicely as stocks did so far in 2019. But generally speaking, they've been working pretty much together. One of the caveats to this is probably the lower grade bonds. Lower grade bonds have not provided as much safety, and you wouldn't expect them to. They pretty much dropped much harder at the end of the year. Came back much greater, but really took a significant dip. The high grade, the high yield bonds, junk bonds, triple B and lower. But when it comes to tips, many of us would have expected, well, you know, rates rising, well, okay, and inflation probably coming up, tips would have done really well. And tips would have also been moving higher as rates were coming up, and we would kind of think about the potential of higher inflation towards the future and looking at that. But, you know, one of the things that happened was that the Fed was raising rates last year to curtail inflation, and tips, you know, didn't really come up as much as you would have expected to if, in fact, there was some inflation, because you have to look at both the tips value and also the yield, right, which is the inflation rate that would be added to the bond. Treasury inflation protected securities. So as yields rose, and we didn't see much of a change for inflation, we didn't really see that benefit to the tips. So they kind of played out and really worked like a midterm bond, maybe like a 7-year bond in terms of pricing. Because they didn't really have much more of a yield they were paying, and the bonds were just getting hit, and you know, all this was happening at the same time, and nothing looked different. Everything was kind of playing the same way. There really wasn't any differential at the end of the year. That's why your portfolios really got hit if you had an exposure towards bonds and stocks, where you would think that you should have seen, at least if you had a longer-term bond portfolio, you would have seen some kind of a benefit from the diversification. It really was only the shortest-term bonds and low duration that really helped you out there. But tips didn't really get, it didn't get hurt that badly. But again, high yield did get hit pretty rough. So when it comes to tips, when it comes to corporate bonds, I would say that you want to stay more on the higher quality scale of corporate bonds if you're going to be investing in those. It's very hard to get a portfolio of corporate bonds that are, let's say, differentiated by short-term, long-term. You need to look under the hood, because a lot of times you'll see a corporate bond fund that the bonds underneath, because they're really trying to pump up and get some really good returns, are lower rated. So look at whether it's Morningstar or some other particular research place that you could find, or the fund itself. Find out really what the average rating and average maturity of those are. We have a position in corporate bonds, but very light. So while it's a pretty good diversification tool overall, I believe, for a portfolio, and I think both tips and bonds in general, here's some of the things that we're doing. And I think it's important to recognize that all bonds are not equal. Depending on quality, depending on duration, depending on maturity, all these things have an important meaning when it comes to how your portfolio of bonds will actually operate in differing conditions. Differing market conditions, different rate conditions. So we're still in the camp that we'd like to lean more on like a lower duration, a shorter duration, and shorter term bonds. That's for right now. We've been doing that for the last year and a half, and we feel pretty comfortable with that. And there's also a benefit that we have found being diversified and using this as a tool for diversification, particularly when you see these drawdowns that we've seen. And while you didn't see whether it's the tips or the short-term and short-duration bonds really seeing a significant drop like you saw the longer terms or the corporates or the high yields, well, they didn't come up as much either this year, but they didn't have as much ground to cover to really make up for those big drops. And one of the things they do for you is, the one thing that I like about these and why it's really good for a portfolio in general is, if you diversify correctly and utilize bonds in your portfolio in a way that offsets some of the risk by not necessarily having the high yield corporates in there, because they're going to pretty much track your stocks. That's how they roll over time. If you have these short durations and tips, et cetera, well, what happens is it helps you ride the storm out with less anxiety. Because a portion of your portfolio, while it may be dropping like we saw in December, where everything was being sold off. There was no place to really go for cover. They didn't drop as much. They held up. So they're down 3 or 4%. They're not down 20. So a 50-50 portfolio, well, you may have a 20% drop, 50% of that's 10. You have 4% drop in your bonds, that's 2. So maybe you have, let's call it, you know, the average of those two, somewhere about maybe an 8% drop, 7% drop. Actually, it'd probably be closer to a 6% drop. So if you think about that, you know, when you kind of average things, again, it depends on what your diversification is, how much you have. You have 60-40, you have 50-50, 80-20. The point is that if you do this correctly and you balance your portfolio that is consistent with your risk and your time horizon, it could really be a real benefit to you long term. Because one of the things that happens when you have too much allocated to an area that maybe is not aligned with your risk is that you do things that are inappropriate for your portfolio at the wrong time. Here's an example. You probably have had this. You know what I'm talking about here. You have too much in a particular stock. That stock does really well for a while. But you know what? That stock is pretty aggressive and all of a sudden starts coming back. And you're like, wow, whoa, wait, hold on. I have $30,000 in that stock. And you know what? Most of my other stocks have $3,000 in it. I have this broad-based diversification. But that one stock, you know what? When I see it move, what happens is it really concerns me because it's a big part of my portfolio. Let's say it's a 10% position in your portfolio. And then you have to decide, do I sell it or do I hold it? Now, if it was only a $5,000 position in your portfolio, you may say, whatever. It's kind of doing what it's supposed to do. It's aligned with my risk. My portfolio is not taking as big of a hit. I don't have to worry about that as much. But now you're in a situation where you have this over, the balance that is over your risk tolerance level, because now it's really impacting your portfolio in a negative way. And you may just do things that are really stupid with it. So it all depends on what your diversification is in your portfolio and how you really look at this. I just want to go back to something because something's been bugging me about my numbers. Let's rewind. If you have 50-50 stock portfolio and the market's dropped 20%, so you're going to have about a 12% loss in your portfolio. Okay? I don't know where I came up with that. If you have 4% and you have 10%. I was saying 6 before. It's been bugging me since I said it. I just got to come back. Sorry about that. Rewind and we're back. So, sorry. So, we like tips. As I was talking about that. I like short-term duration. One of the things that you could do, by the way, is if you're inclined and you want to do this, you know, we have this Investology offering, this online, kind of this robo-esque type of process where it's advisor crafted and technology enhanced portfolio creation and management. What you could do is you go over to the site on the top of investology.com with an E, investology.com. When you go there, there's a little button at the top that says sort of log in, create account. If you just go there, there's no cost to doing this. You don't have to worry about anything here about, you know, being locked into something. Basically, you go in there, just register for free. And go and start creating your portfolio. And what you'll see there is, depending on the risk that comes out from our questionnaire, you'll see an actual portfolio that's put right in front of you. And you'll see how we're using, whether it's short-term or international bonds, hedged or unhedged, you'll see that right on the screen when the portfolio is developed for you. And you can move it around to change it around and do another risk tolerance questionnaire. And it'll come up with different risk factors and different portfolio designs. Again, yes, we'd love you to come on board with us and invest with us. It's only $10,000 minimum. But I'm just telling you this. If you want to get an idea of how we're looking at things right now in terms of portfolios and the diversification and usage of things like tips and short-term bonds, that's a great tool that you could use and check it out. So just something there. Anyway, thanks so much, Rob, for your question there. And of course, anybody could go to Ask Andrew and ask a question and see what's going on there. So do that. Ask a question. Give me your comments. Tell me what's going on. I'd love to hear from you. Seriously. So if you've never written me before, do me a favor. Write me. Tell me how long you've been listening to the show, why you listen to the show, what you get out of it, what you like to see, what you hate about it. I really do appreciate it. Let's turn our attention now to GDP. Why don't we? GDP came out on Friday at 3.2%. Wow. Wow. 3.2%. Yeah, we were looking at 2, maybe even sub 2. Everything was lining up when it comes to manufacturing and ISM numbers. When we looked at pretty much every component of GDP, it looked like, you know, I could probably see around the 2 range, somewhere right around there. I figured 1.9 at 2.1. Street was at about 2.2. We get 3.2, 1% higher. I mean, wow, seriously, that's pretty impressive. Right on the print, markets moved up. Futures kind of started skyrocketing. The dollar started moving up. Yields started moving up. And all of a sudden, that reversed in the morning. Reality hit. People were asking the question, hold on. How is it that we see a 3.2% GDP number where every number that going into it up to this point looked like it was going to be much weaker? And we know, generally speaking, the first quarter is pretty weak. Then we have other things going into it, like the thought that, hey, the last few quarters were a lot of pull forwards from the tariffs. What is going on? Well, here's what happened. When we look at the internals of the GDP number, and of course, this is all about statistics, and we know all the lines about statistics, right? There was a massive inventory buildup that helped at about almost 0.75% increase GDP. Somehow there was this mysterious inventory build that came out, just came out of nowhere. So people are wondering a lot of things. Questions are being asked. Could this be some government tinkering? Because they've always had a hard time with first quarter and they're trying to clean. You know, we know for the last couple of years that the government's talking about, oh, the first quarter, there's an aberration in it and there's a weird seasonality that goes involved with this. And, you know, we're going to try to fix this, whatever that means. Because God forbid we have some kind of, you know, strange number on a quarterly GDP. No, we can't have that. We got to fix it, make it look like it's supposed to be, right? I mean, it's got to look right. It's got to feel right. And of course, when they fix the first quarter's GDP, are they going to then mess with the rest of them? Because if you fix the first one, something's got to give on the other side, right? Fourth quarter or second quarter. Something's got to give somewhere. A lot of questions about government tinkering and whether or not this is what's going on. And maybe it's more important to look at really the underlying inside of this particular GDP number. Because right now I wouldn't put something past anyone. Yes, the underlying question then is, of course, what do you mean government tinkering, Andrew? I mean, are you saying that somebody fudged the numbers somewhere? I don't know. I'll be honest with you, right now, I wouldn't put anything past anyone. I really wouldn't. To me, it seems like we've had this, I don't know, we're in a time that we've lost our way. We've lost our focus on what's supposed to be important here. And we have this very, I guess it's this Machiavellian feel to our, I at least have this, to our current government. You know, the ends justify the means. As long as things look good, maybe they're not as well, you know, everybody gets richer, you know, because people think things are better and it's all good. And, you know, let's just keep on going along with this. And if we have to tinker with it and we have to change it, and it's okay. Because you know what? Maybe that will instill confidence, and confidence brings out buying, and that will eventually, it will all play out. Everything will come out in the wash just fine. But you know what? I'm not alone here. I just looked up the poll that shows, and of course the poll's right, the poll's wrong. Well, I don't know, but here it is anyway. Pew Research came up with a poll, and I don't know if you know this, but, and you may, it probably seems pretty logical, but the public trust in government is right now near a record low. Only 17% of Americans today say they trust government in Washington to do what's right. Three percent says just about always they'll do what's right, and most of the time is 14%. So we really have a lack of trust in the government in total. And you're probably sitting there shaking your head going, yep, yep, we don't trust them. And whether You're on the left, you're on the right, you're in the middle, you're nowhere. Either side you don't trust, but the whole thing, you probably are saying the same thing. I don't know many people that I've talked to in many, many different circles that really have a real good feeling for government doing the right thing. And maybe that's what's going on with GDP. Maybe not. I don't know. Just putting it out there. But when we do look at the underlying GDP numbers, you know, one of the things that you have to really say that is true, because the numbers show this, is, yeah, inventories came up dramatically, but consumption tapered off dramatically. Government spending dropped precipitously. Imports fell. Industrial output fell. So somehow, this massive inventory saved the day. And I have another whole discussion on whether or not inventory build should really be a component of GDP anyway. It seems a little counterintuitive to me, because if you have inventory builds, it means that there's too much manufacturing going on that can't be sold necessarily. And when you have these builds, it's actually a negative, and I think it should take away. When you're stripping down inventories and then you have the need to replenish, well, the manufacturing number should be the one that goes into GDP on a real-time basis rather than the inventory, which is a bit lagging. The fact that you have inventory built is, in my opinion, not a good thing. You don't want to have an inventory build. You want inventories flowing pretty well. Seeing a dramatic inventory build could increase, or said a different way, inventory flow downs, and where you're seeing inventory stripped down, may mean that there's shopping and retail and consumers that are doing their thing, but manufacturers aren't producing because of concern about the outlook. So there's some weird things going on with inventory, in my opinion, with GDP. But nonetheless, this inventory number saved the day. Strip that out, and we're not going to. But if you did, in theory, you'd have about a 2.4%, still better than expectations of about 2.2%. So GDP was better. But that pretty much explains why the dollar dropped after the number, even though it initially went up. It explains why yields came down. It doesn't necessarily explain why markets continued higher throughout the day. But nonetheless, Friday was a good day, ending a decent week. The last thing I want to talk about today is earnings. But I want to focus in on one company. I thought it was really interesting. And this was going into the week. It was something I was looking at and definitely looking to see what was going on, because it's been troubling watching what's going on at Tesla. And Tesla and what Elon Musk has done on Twitter, and his absolute disdain for the SEC and the establishment, and saying everybody is wrong but him, is kind of like what I'm seeing generally happening in other places. And I wanted to really focus in on this because I wanted to see how it was going to come out and how it was going to play out when we saw 2 quarters ago him saying that there was going to be a continuation of earnings, that on the positive side, and, you know, car sales that were doing better and all this stuff that he promised. And I wanted to see that everybody that was believing this, not dropping the stock, holding it, you know, right at that, give or take that 300 level, 275-ish, you know, popping it. Every time it went to about 262, it would pop back up. And even though everybody seemed to know that there was real problems with production, that some of it was resolved, but the delivery department was gutted, and we saw that there was a slowdown overall, and, you know, there was this question as to, wait, I thought you were going to be positive, but last quarter you came in with a weird number also and made excuses. How long could this go on? So I listened in on the conference call. Now, first of all, let's also state that the earnings numbers were abysmal. Loss of $2.09, thought that there's going to be a loss of under 50 cents. Production numbers dropped off, revenue dropped off. Things were not looking good there after we saw all these promises. And I wanted to hear what Elon would say about all this. It's also a very entertaining, very confusing conference call usually. He has a weird way of talking. And this stuff that happens during the conference call is usually pretty interesting. So I wasn't disappointed. You know, there was some weird stuff that went on during that conference call. One thing that caught my ear, one thing that I found very interesting in the discussion, was that Elon Musk was projecting better sales in the next couple of quarters. And he's talking about how there was a little bit of a lull and all that, but basically a real ramp in production in production and sales are going to ensue, and things are going to right, things are going to get better. And he was asked and pressed by one of the calls, and they said, "Well, Elon, that's great. Good to hear that. Tell us why you believe that. What is your insights? What are your insights based on in telling us how much better things are going to get and how production is just going to be, you know, back to where it is because sales are going to pick up so dramatically?" And his answer was, he just feels it's going to happen. I feel that's what's going to happen here. And at first it looked like, you know what, investors were just going to blow this off and say, okay, this is going to, you know, this is going to be the worst quarter. They're going to look past it. Stock was hanging in there after the conference call. Actually went positive the next day, came down a little bit. It wasn't until Friday when I think a lot of people looked through the numbers and realized what was going on. And also on top of that, an extension of a discount for some of the cars that were being pushed again and saying, you know what, this seems to be a pattern. A pattern of promises and then disappointments. And the stock hit, you know, a two-year low on Friday. And one of the things I was thinking about this is because a few people that I know that really love the Tesla car. I think it's a wonderful car. I have nothing to say negative about it. Fantastic. Driven in them. They're fast. They're cool. They're sexy. No question about that. But here's the lesson I think we could all learn from this. You can love a product, but you don't necessarily have to love the company. There's a lot of great examples out there from history. You want to separate the company from the product. And I'll tell you something. As much as you may love the car, there's nothing to love, in my opinion, about the company itself and the management in particular. And I think maybe it's time to think about changing management here. And I'll tell you something. You can look at what happened of companies that this happened to, where you put an adult in charge, not the founder with the vision, but somebody who could actually run the company. Different than the engineering, different than the product development, different than the vision of the company's product. Rather, you put somebody in that is a professional in the area of being a CEO, the full management team. I mean, look what happened with Facebook when the management changed at Microsoft or Google for that matter. In this case, separate the founder and maybe, possibly, things will turn around. Maybe there's something that he's overlooking that the board, who seems to be bought and paid for, are just overlooking. Maybe it's time to get somebody professional in there that does this as, you know, that's what they do. And I'll share this with you. It's even possible that if they do that, I would look to invest in the company if they could show me some real good plans to turn things around without all the fluff, promises, broken promises, and just pie in the sky viewing. So just maybe I'd look at that. I mean, I wouldn't get near it now with Elon at the helm here because he's, in my opinion, an absolute genius, but an absolute disaster at the same time. He does not belong as CEO of the company. Just my opinion. And I think by some of the people that I know that are absolute bulls. We had him on, Ross Gerber. We had him on 3 or 4 shows ago, and he was just a bull on Tesla and all that. He is even capitulating and saying he's selling shares. So what does that say? Maybe it's time to buy, some of you are thinking. But nonetheless, just anyway, a little quick lesson there. Separate the company from the product, and don't fall in love with the company because you fell in love with the product. Otherwise, you'd be hip deep in GoPro stock. With that, we're going to end the show. I want to thank you for joining me. Of course, join me each and every week here on the weekends on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Of course, on Tuesdays, John C. Dvorak and I do DH Unplugged. That's a fun show. We always have some great things that we talk about there. A lot of fun, a little bit of comic relief, a little bit of a dissection in a different way of the markets, play some great games, give away some shirts. some DH Unplugged shirts and all. And if you want to get part of our stock picking game, call Close to the Pin, you could do that as well. Listen to DH Unplugged or go to dhunplugged.com. We're going to end it there. I wish you a wonderful week. I'll see you around in 7 days. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.